Success.
I don't know what this is like Byzantine. I'm in a such a bad mood. I really feel like I should maybe skip this.
Because we thought about doing it next week, because next week is the fifth
At
week.
this, I might be committing suicide soon. So this may be the last opportunity I have to do this. I had prepared something that I really wanted to get done, and I wanted to get you guys' cooperation. Because it's really, really important that I do this. Because if it wasn't, I would just go out on my fire escape and have a great day. But I've had this happen to me last week. This is not the first time that happened. It happened to me three times before. So I don't know what's happening, but it's all happening right now. And I'm really getting sick of it. And if I can channel this effectively into this reading today, that would be great. But I have to be honest with you guys. There's no guarantee that's going to happen. I am so fed up. The city is really in chaos now. It's every 40% of the population has disappeared. They've broken their leases. Their stuff is thrown out in the street. The city is. It used to be like Singapore. I don't know what it's going to end up being like. Bangladesh. You know, we have another big storm, but it's like it's the end of this, and the end of the city is dying. And I just see all these young people just packing their bags and getting in their cars and going off somewhere. I don't know where they're going, but I'm really fed up. I'm not going to commit suicide. Pardon me for being a little overly dramatic, but I'm surrounded by people who are in a suicidal downward spiral. And some very beautiful people are out on the street and trying to make sense of things, and I wish them the best. But it doesn't look good. So it's up to you guys. If y'all want to continue with this reading today, or you want to postpone it for next week, or you want to continue today, that's fine with me too. But I'm just letting you guys know I am not a happy camper, and Zoom has almost pushed me into the darkest of dark moods. I changed my password twice, and then when I finally got logged in, I was given another pop-up that said I needed an ID. And that's when I called for help, because I don't know what that meant. Because any idea I offer them, they reject it. So is this the new norm, Marco? Is this the way Zoom works now?
Well, we
Or
were just talking about it a little bit earlier with Jeffrey. Yeah, there are
they're just
diff
targeting me for this?
No, you're they're not after you personally. I this is their reaction to the privacy breaches and things like that. They've kind of imposed new security. I'm speaking like a propagandist right now for Zoom, but security measures
You had no
relating to
trouble.
password.
Did you have any trouble, Jeffrey?
And no,
Did
I
you?
had trouble with my own computer this morning, but not with getting on Zoom. I
I
just
like.
used the link that Marco gave us and I clicked on it. It took us straight here, but it's not the same Zoom room as the original one I usually use. So, yeah.
Okay. I
Right.
like the
So,
haircut, Jeffrey. Looks good.
I feel the frustration with the overcomplication of doing something as simple as connecting with and having a dialogue with other people. I'm holding sincerely the intention to make it simpler and to make it easier to the extent that I have the power to do so. Right now we're using Zoom. Perhaps we should use something else. But I've looked and I haven't found anything else that says that is as Zoom was easy before. So, noted. But you had something you said that you wanted to present. Is that still the case?
I don't know if I've poisoned the atmosphere so badly now that
Not
I
at
can.
all. No, this is like documentary kind of evidence of what's actually going on in the world, in your
I'm
world
glad you guys
specifically.
are doing fine. I'm just not doing well at all.
Johnny, we love you, so you can present anything and we'll follow you.
That's very kind of you. I know I have a very kind audience here, always have. That's why I'm pursuing what I consider extremely esoteric kind of approach. But we're getting ready to end this. This is our next to the last session. And I would like to integrate some of what we've explored with the voice and with our communication. And I'm interested, as you all know, in the invisible and making the invisible visible and the architecture, the invisible architecture of the voice has been a lifelong fascination for me. I just wanted to share this with you guys. Well, this process wouldn't take more than 15 minutes, and I believe it would help center, certainly myself, hopefully center others as well, so that we could then enjoy this reading together. The doctrine of vibration, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's a very obscure book on Kashmir Shaivism, the analysis of the doctrines and practices of Kashmir Shaivism. I took a course with Swami, what's her name, Sally Kempton? You know her, Marco?
Yep.
Okay. I did this with Sally up in, where was it? It was in Kripalu. It was a week-long retreat. I had done a few workshops with her in the city, but I was really looking forward to this because this was her text. She was going to be using this. And I found out that, and she couldn't do it because she was sick, and she sent two of her assistants. So I did it with her assistants, none of whom had read the book. I found out that all the persons in the workshop, including the assistants who were teaching it, I was the only one who read the book, the only one who did their homework. So that was very frustrating because I needed guidance with this book, this text. And Sally's really steeped in that tradition. And as you guys are, and we've all studied Aurobindo, and you guys are continuing to study Aurobindo, I was really reflecting on this experience of vibration, the doctrine of vibration. And I can't pronounce his name. This whole book is dedicated to Abhinavagupta. You know how to pronounce it, Mark.
Abhinavagupta. No, I don't.
Okay, well, you have a friend who's steeped in this, right?
Ben Williams is a scholar of Abhinavagupta, did his thesis on him.
Well, there's no doubt that he's a genius, and he really has a model for the subtle body that I find extremely compatible, or what he calls a hybrid body. But I'm just going to quote him. This will not be too esoteric, I think, for you guys, because you've been studying Aurobindo, and he's drawing upon the same kind of mythology. But this is the, he's talking about, is basically talking about Shakti and Shiva and the contraction and the expansion and the very subtle forms of contraction and expansion. And as these are two modes of knowledge, and he goes on, and I'm quoting him, the cognitive power of consciousness is its capacity to shift back and forth between these two modes. And as it does, select some of the countless potential forms merged within to make them externally manifest. The light of consciousness, full to overflowing with innumerable phenomena, thus separates some of them from itself, while at the same time limiting its own nature to appear as the individual subject set apart from the object. Perception takes place when this limited subject is affected by the shade cast upon it by the object. As the pulse of awareness moves from the expanded, undivided state to the contracted, limited condition, and back again at each instant, novel perceptions are generated, and the world of experience is thus constantly renewed. Well, this is very philosophical language, which for a performer is absolutely useless. But if you have a practice, and I wanted to share with you a practice, I believe it makes the text that I just read begins to make good sense. Of course, I'm winging this because I'm not a scholar of this at all, except I have read it. I didn't get any guidance in it as I had hoped to by Sally or her assistants, but I'm returning to it today. So I think there's something I need to like revisit here. But this, I think this is a little weird, but if you just settle into your seat, okay, and drop your awareness out of the cognitive masculine head into the pelvic floor. And feel the perineum, it's, you know, when you stop yourself from peeing, you engage the perineum. It's between the anus and the genitals. So can you, do you feel the perineum?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the center of your pelvis. I think we lost Jeffrey. Jeffrey, you're still
perineum fell down.
I've done work with this before, and I feel like I need to stand.
Oh, okay, great. Okay. So if you, that standing is fine. So you find your pelvic floor, you find your perineum, and you can, you know where your perineum is. It's that soft muscle between the anus and the genitals. And the movement, as you breathe into the perineum, it softens. So it goes like this. On the out-breath, it falls. On the in-breath, it rises. So it's a very subtle movement of falling on the out-breath and rising on the in-breath. I think within a few minutes, you can get that. Can you feel that sensation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I really want you to enjoy that. And as you feel the breath, float the perineum slightly open on the out-breath. And on the in-breath, let it settle. So on the out-breath, you're floating the pelvis open. And the in-breath, you're just letting it settle. So it's like this. So this is a, this pelvic floor is a diaphragm. We also have the diaphragm up on our chest, around our chest, which goes like this. But if we float the pelvic floor open, then let it settle, we have a bottom up breathing rather than top down breathing. Top down breathing tends to contract us, actually, so that the this and this coordinate. This creates a cascade effect. Very pleasant sensations can start to be liberated throughout the sensorium, which is really the point of all this. And I'm really glad that you gave me a chance to introduce this exercise, because I believe it really helps to restabilize me after such a panic-stricken morning, trying to get into this Zoom. So, how's that going for you, Jeffrey? Does it feel good while you stand? Can you feel the circulation happening?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I told you I've done this thing before, because my friend, Mary Louise, does these exercises. She's a singer and she trains using the perineum, so yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And how is it for you, Marco?
Well, I'm wondering about the relationship between the inhalation, exhalation, and then the expansion and contraction. You said with the inhalation, let things settle, and with the exhalation, let things expand.
Okay. Well, actually, no, it's the other way around, I think. As you breathe in, it expands.
Mm-hmm.
As you breathe out, just let it settle. Don't try to contract.
Okay.
That's the language. I probably shouldn't have introduced that language. It confuses. But it's not it's much more of a, as you breathe in, you can feel it expand and open slightly. And as you breathe out, it just relaxes.
Okay. Right. That's right.
There are some tantric practices where there's a lot of contraction going on, but not in this one. This is much more like just letting your pelvic floor fill up with breath and relax.
Mm.
Fill up with breath and relax. And it can have, like I said, sensations throughout the body can start being liberated. And now I want to add some sound to this to amplify the resonant body, which we all are. Can you hear me, Jeffrey? Can you hear me okay? Okay. So our body is a resonator. this is where the doctrine of vibrations come in. So we're resonating from the pelvic floor rather than from the head. This is a very big difference. And I believe we can create a corridor of relationality between the head, the heart, the gut. But the pelvic floor is where we start. This is our root in many traditions. This is called the root center. So I'm going to give us a few tones that will help us to amplify, differentiate the root, the sex center, and right above that, the navel. And these three areas are the energies of the pelvis start to get released and can go upwards. Okay, so enough talk. Let me just walk you through this. I think it's very pleasurable and very easy to get. So you're using the L sound, L-U-N-G. And send that, float it down to the root, to the perineum. And just use that L-U. And now lift it up a little to the sex center, right above the root. And use the vroom, V-R-U-N-G, and use that V sound to resonate with the sex center. One more time. And just rest for a moment, just gathering together all those different resonances in the pelvis. And then we're going to go a little higher up in the pelvis to the navel, between the navel and the spine. And use the sound room, R-U-N-G. And I'll go back down into the perineum, the root center, with the loom sound. And then the V sound again, a little higher. And the room sound up around the navel. And just relax. And Jeffrey, if you want to sit back down, this might be better for you to sit down with this, because we've basically just have opened up that pelvic intelligence, And I wanted to do a little experimenting with the text, okay, using this awakened pelvic intelligence and how we can take a text and we can root it in the pelvis and discover how it can, how it moves and radiates. And I wanted to use the text by a great poet, Jesus of Nazareth. I just wanted to use one line. Blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted. You can hold that in your cognitive capacity, working with words. You can give yourself, before we do that, just a gentle smile. I'm doing this mostly for myself. I'm tuning into a gentle smile. And then letting go of the smile on the face and let it move inward, a soft, gentle smile. And let that smile float downwards with the text, blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Let it float all the way down into the pelvic floor, which is now resonating with all the sounds that we have been making together. And blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Just to resonate with that. And contacting that corridor, you can bring it up into the heart center, let it radiate forward, outward, above, below, any direction, behind. While maintaining the root and allowing, like the root of a plant and the flowering of the plant in the heart, radiate outwards. Blessed are those that mourn, for they shall be comforted. And so this is just an example of how you could use a bit of text to ground both the cognitive, ground and blend the cognitive and the somatic intelligences. Too often, as you heard me complain in English class, we were taught how to read the text from the neck up. So now we're reading, we're studying, and we're resonating with the text, because especially poetry is highly vibrational. And we're working on many different levels here. So I thank you very much. Deep bows to each of you and all of you and both of you for putting up with my temper tantrum this morning. But I think it helps me to sort of take the serenity that I can experience by myself on my fire escape, watching the trees and the birds, into a social communal space, which is where we often need it the most. My experience is meditation practice is great, but it doesn't always transfer immediately to the hustle and the bustle of social dynamics with other egos and agendas. And my own egos and agendas start to obfuscate. But I think if we can just touch that pelvic floor, as we've been doing, breathing gently and easily, I believe that the vibration of that, combined with that inner smile, which I think I got from a Taoist teacher, can, I believe, create these a network of support for our study and performance today of Milton's text. So my invitation would be, and then I'll shut up and listen to you guys, if we can, as we listen to the other speaker, if we can maintain the breath can rest in the rise and the fall of the perineum, that pelvic intelligence, I believe that is a great service to another person, because we can listen to them at a much deeper level than we normally will if we're just working with a cognitive. And also when we are the speaker, the designated speaker, if we can continue to find in the shapes and the sounds that Milton makes, we can find the echo or the afterglow of the loom, vroom, vroom. So this stuff is actually extremely simple, but it has enormous philosophical implications, as those of us who've been studying Aurobindo. And my complaint about Aurobindo is I think he does too much top-down rather than bottom-up. Some would probably disagree with me here. But at any rate, I hope this has been a useful exercise or a practice. Exercise sounds so much like going to the gym, but I think a practice is probably a better way to describe this. And I believe this kind of a practice can help us integrate at a much deeper level what's going on in Milton's great epic than if we were just, you know, doing close readings and checking out the footnotes. I'm all for that, but I think it needs to be supported by this much faster intelligence. And then I think all the cognitive stuff, in my experience, works much better. I find myself, I feel like I'm connecting to this pelvic intelligence, my cognition gets much more fluid. So that's my hope. We'll see what happens. Thank you. And any feedback or comments or, you know, whatever comes up for you, I want to open the floor to where you guys are coming from and what you would like to have happen today and for the next reading as we wrap this up. It's a very intense study.
That was lovely, John. Takes me back to my work on breathing.
You're a singer too. You've done a lot of singing.
My friend Mary Louise, who teaches this breathing technique, and she uses the perineum, as I say. She also, you know, because you talk about the lower diaphragm and the upper diaphragm. For the upper diaphragm, her practice is to use the perineum to help you bring your ribs out. Because if you do that, you breathe in without making any effort. The air just comes down. And that's the way singers do it. Because in order to sing, you just have to let the air fill your lungs. You don't want to force it down. So it's the technique used by singers to sing. So anyway, it's very close to the kind of thing that you're talking about. I'm going to have her watch the video for this because I think... I like your because you can feel the different levels in that. That's really interesting. But I don't think she knows about that, or she does that. So.
I love that, Jeffrey. You just gave me a rush when you said that. I could feel the vibe down there. It's such a forbidden zone for us to talk about the perineum and the anus and the genitals. But that's where would we be without it?
That's where it all comes from, right?
Exactly. thank you so much. And I'm also wanted to quote Shilyapin, the great Russian bass. They asked him, where do you sing from? And he said, from my asshole.
Yeah, voilà.
Which is not a very, which is a pretty outrageous thing to say.
I enjoyed it very much, and I've been practicing with vocal techniques or vocalization, but without any real framework. I haven't studied it. I haven't taken workshops, so I just play with my voice and I play with my body as a resonating chamber. But there's kind of these peaks of clarity that I experience when I can get things in sync. And then for much of the time, like in my day-to-day life, as I interact with my family and with practical things, it all gets mixed. It gets kind of out of whack. And the currents don't flow freely. And there isn't a sort of steady, easy, effortless breathing. There's like efforting around accomplishing one thing or another, or the stresses in communication, any number of things, everything that's going on, just like the state that you came in to this meeting with, that's a perpetual, like a chronic occurrence, I think, in my life as well, in different ways. And so to harmonize as we maybe transition into reading this text, I think is nice, because I feel vertically more harmonized, and also horizontally with you two, more in sync. So I appreciate the exercise, and I'm looking forward as well to a event or a kind of practicum that Jeffrey has been setting up. We're just at the conception stage right now, but it involves savagery and reading that text with some like vocal coaching and from, I believe, the friend that you mentioned, Jeffrey.
Yeah, right? Mary Louise, yeah.
I think that's an excellent idea. I really do. I think it would make savagery much more accessible, because I can't imagine reading it from the neck up. It has to be, it is a mantric text. So,
exactly.
And I think this text as well rides on complex vibratory resonating, all these resonating things, the body mind, the body and the body world. This isn't just about the body mind, it's about the body world.
And we know that Milton wrote orally, right? I mean, because he was blind, he was all about the recitation of the text, and it was done in verbal form. So I agree, I think it's very vibratory in that sense. Yeah.
I can't imagine where he could come up with this without the pelvis, that pelvic intelligence. I mean, you can feel it when you're reading him, but this is rooted and right down to the center of the earth. Although he uses a lot of different registers. I don't know how you could compose something like this without blowing a fuse if you didn't have that pelvic intelligence resonating and working with that. So I love everything that you guys have shared. And I also, I guess I was in the strangest mood, because I just had the worst news that someone that I greatly admired, I didn't know him personally, but Michael Brooks, he was a political analyst and he was a podcaster. He died 2 days ago, very mysteriously. And he was a pivotal figure for the left, the radical left, the enlightened left. He knew Wilbur very well. And I feel very distressed that this leader, who was just getting started, 36 years old, died mysteriously. So blessed are those that mourn. I think a lot of people are mourning his passing. And, what a celebration it is as well, because he was such a brilliant man. But I feel right now a little forlorn, because I just don't see, of course, we shouldn't depend on fearless leaders, for sure. But I feel there may be a collective intelligence that can sustain us through this gigantic upheaval that we're just starting to feel the effects of. But I think maybe two or three or more are gathered together and can just touch the intelligence that's already here, that we could probably amplify something beyond just the the meetup that we're having today. So that's what keeps me going. Otherwise, I would have just said, fuck this shit. I'm so tired of entering my password again and again and having it rejected. My blood pressure just went up, so I'm starting to settle down. So thank you, guys. And wherever you guys want to be, and I'm ready for it.
I also was noting to Marco earlier that we've been reading this text for just almost exactly a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
It feels like we're just getting started with the possibilities, though. I think this is really putting us through our paces and giving us a kind of multi-spheric training, because we're getting the pelvic, we're getting the earth, the rooted, the hell space, right? And we're flying into the celestial realms, we're flying into paradises, we're embodying and animating and characterizing the voices of the utter extremes that the human imagination has been able to conceive in good and evil and beauty and, you know, wickedness. And it's been, for me, a transformative exercise. I resonate a lot, no pun intended, with the kind of vibrational philosophy, or the idea that the universe is a form of vibration, that we experience it vibrationally. I think, I don't know too much about Abhivanagupta or about the particular kind of theory associated with that idea. I think it comes up as well in some Gnostic texts, but I feel it experientially. That's, I think, that the one of the attractive aspects of that idea is that it's not something that one has to comprehend mentally, but to experience as a resonating being. So I think we should read this next book. And I had been commenting to Jeffrey that it lends itself to a triad, because in each of the three subsections of this book, there is a narrator and then two interlocutors. In the first instance, God and the Son, and then Adam and Eve, and then Adam and Michael. And so I had expressed a preference for playing the role of the narrator this time, because I haven't really done that much, which would leave the characters to you guys if you are amenable to that, and you could choose, you know, whomever you want to be.
I think I want to do Eve, but...
I was going to suggest that, actually.
Typecasting.
The other ones you can assign me, but...
I think you should do Eve and the Son.
Okay.
As well, because you've been kind of the Jehovah a few times.
I have been a bit too much the Jehovah in the late readings.
And then, so Michael or Adam?
I can do either Michael or Adam. Are they in dialogue?
Well, I guess, Jeffrey, you could be Michael, since John, you would be Adam previous to that.
Okay.
And I'll just narrate.
And now we're at that stage where we've all been introduced to these characters and we've already played them a couple of times, sort of like a rep company. So I think this is a part of that integration phase that maybe Milton is starting to initiate.
Mm.
Thank you.
We've also gone the rounds a bit as well. We've each, I think, had the opportunity to play different characters and different kinds of characters. So I think that's been really... That's been cool.
So should I read the argument?
And, go for it.
Yeah, that's good.
Now we're in book, which 11. Is this 11?
Yeah.
We did 10 last week, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is book 11. The argument. The Son of God presents to his Father the prayers of our first parents now repenting and intercedes for them. God accepts them, but declares that they must no longer abide in paradise. sends Michael with a band of cherubim to dispossess them, but first to reveal to Adam future things. Michael's coming down. Adam shows to Eve certain ominous signs. He discerns Michael's approach, goes out to meet him. The angel denounces their departure. Eve's lamentation. Adam pleads, but submits. The angel leads him up to a high hill, sets before him in vision what shall happen till the flood.
Thus they in lowliest plight, repentant, stood praying. For from the mercy seat above, prevenient grace descending had removed the stony from their hearts, and made new flesh regenerate, grow instead. That sighs now breathed unutterable, which the spirit of prayer inspired, and winged for heaven with speedier flight than loudest oratory. Yet their port, not of means suitors, nor important less seemed their petition, than when the ancient pair in fables old, less ancient yet than these, Deucalion and chaste Pyra to restore the race of mankind drowned, before the shrine of Themis stood devout. To heaven their prayers flew up, nor missed the way, by envious winds blown vagabond or frustrate. In they passed dimensionless through heavenly doors, then clad with incense, where the golden altar fumed, by their great intercessor, came in sight before the Father's throne. Them the glad Son presenting, thus to intercede, began.
See, Father, what first fruits on earth are sprung from thy implanted grace in man. These sighs and prayers, which in this golden censer, mixed with incense, I, thy priest, before thee bring, fruits of more pleasing savor, from thy seed sown with contrition in his heart, than those which in his own hand manuring, all the trees of paradise could have produced, ere fallen from innocence. Now, therefore, bend thine ear to supplication, hear his sighs, though mute. Unskillful with what words to pray, let me interpret for him. Me, his advocate and propitiation, all his works on me, good or not good, ingraft. My merit those shall perform, and for these my death shall pay. Accept me, and in me from these receive the smell of peace towards mankind. Let him live before thee reconciled, at least his days numbered, though sad, till death, his doom, which I to mitigate thus plead, not to reverse, to better life shall yield him, where with me all my redeemed may dwell in joy and bliss, made one with me as I with thee am one.
To whom the Father, without cloud, serene.
All thy request for man, accepted Son, obtain. All thy request was my decree. But longer in that paradise to dwell, the law I gave to nature him forbids. Those pure immortal elements that know no gross, no unharmonious mixture foul, eject him tainted now, and purge him off as a distemper, gross to air as gross and mortal food, as may dispose him best for dissolution wrought by sin, that first distempered all things, and of incorrupt corrupted. I at first with two fair gifts created him endowed, with happiness and immortality, that fondly lost, this other served but to eternize woe, till I provided death, so death becomes his final remedy, and after life tried in sharp tribulation and refined by faithful and faithful works to second life, waked in the renovation of the just, resigns him up with heaven and earth renewed. But let us call to synod all the blessed through heaven's wide bounds. From them I will not hide my judgments, how with mankind I proceed. as how with peccant angels late they saw, and in their state, though firm, stood more confirmed.
He ended, and the sun gave signal high to the bright minister that watched. He blew his trumpet, heard in Oreb since perhaps when God descended, and perhaps once more to sound at general doom. The angelic blast filled all the regions. From their blissful bowers of amaranthine shade, fountain or spring, by the waters of life, where'er they sat in fellowships of joy, the sons of light hasted, resorting to the summons high, and took their seats, till from his throne supreme the Almighty thus pronounced his sovereign will.
O sons, like one of us man is become to know both good and evil, since his taste of that defended fruit. But let him boast his knowledge of good lost and evil got, happier had it sufficed him to have known good by itself and evil not at all. His sorrows now repents and prays contrite, my motions in him longer than they move. His heart I know, how variable and vain, self left. Lest therefore his now bolder hand reach also of the tree of life, and eat and forever and live forever, dream at least to live forever, to remove him I decree, and send him from the garden forth to till the ground whence he was taken, fitter soil. Michael, this my behest hath thou in charge. Take to thee from among the cherubim thy choice of flaming warriors, lest the fiend or in behalf of man or to evade vacant possession some new trouble raise. Haste thee, and from the paradise of God without remorse drive out the sinful pair, from hallowed ground the unholy, and denounce to them and to their progeny from thence perpetual banishment. Yet lest they faint at the sad sentence rigorously urged, for I behold them softened, and with tears bewailing their excess, all terror hide. If patiently thy bidding they obey, dismiss them not disconsolate. Reveal to Adam what shall come in future days, as I shall thee enlighten, intermix my covenant and the woman's seed renewed. So send them forth, though sorrowing yet in peace. And on the east side of the garden place, where entrance up from Eden easiest climbs, cherubic watch, and of a sword the flame, wide waving, all approach far off to fright, and guard all passage to the tree of life, lest paradise or receptacle prove to spirits foul, and all my trees their prey, with whose stolen fruit men once more to delude.
He ceased. And the archangelic power prepared for swift descent, with him the cohort bright of watchful cherubim. Four faces each had, like a double Janus, all their shapes spangled with eyes more numerous than those of Argus, and more wakeful than to drowse. Charmed with Arcadian pipe, the pastoral reed of Hermes, or his opiate rod. Meanwhile, to resalute the world with sacred light, Leucothea waked, and with fresh dews embalmed the earth, when Adam and first matron Eve had ended now their orisons, and found strength added from above, new hope to spring out of despair, joy, but with fear yet linked, which thus to Eve his welcome words renewed. So this would be Eve. You, John.
Who is this? I'm sorry.
This would be you. This is Adam.
This is Adam now. I'm Adam, okay. Eve, easily may faith admit that all the good which we enjoy from heaven descends, but that from us aught should ascend to heaven, so prevalent as to concern the mind of God high bless, or to incline his will, hard to belief may seem. Yet this will prayer, or one short sigh of human breath, upborne even to the seat of God, for since I sought by prayer the offended deity to appease, kneeled and before him humbled all my heart, methought I saw him placable and mild, bending his ear. Persuasion in me grew that I was heard with favor. Peace returned home to my breast, and to my memory his promise, that thy seed shall bruise our foe, which then, not minded in dismay, yet now assures me that the bitterness of death is past and we shall live. Winds, hail to thee, Eve, rightly called, mother of all mankind, mother of all things living, since by thee man is to live, and all things live for man.
To whom thus Eve, with sad demeanor, meek,
ill worthy I such titles should belong to me, transgressor, who, for thee ordained a help, became thy snare. To me reproach rather belongs, distrust, and all dispraise. But infinite in pardon was my judge, that I, who first brought death on all, am graced the source of life. Next favorable thou, who highly thus to entitle me vouchsafed, far other name deserving. But the field to labor calls us, now with sweat imposed, though after sleepless night. For see, the morn, all unconcerned with our unrest, begins her rosy progress smiling. Let us forth. I never from thy side henceforth to stray, where e'er our day's work lies, though now enjoined laborious till day droop, while here we dwell, what can be toilsome in these pleasant walks? Here let us live, though in fallen state, content.
So spake, so wished much humbled Eve, but fate subscribed not. Nature first gave signs, impressed on bird, beast, air, air suddenly eclipsed, after short blush of morn. Nigh in her sight the bird of Jove stooped from his airy tour, two birds of gayest plume before him drove. Down from a hill the beast that reigns in woods, first hunter then, pursued a gentle brace, goodliest of all the forest, hart and hind. Direct to the eastern gate was bent their flight, Adam observed, and with his eye the chase pursuing, not unmoved, to Eve thus spake.
This is Adam, right? O Eve, some further change awaits us nigh, which heaven by these mute signs in nature shows forerunners of his purpose, or to warn us haply too secure of our discharge from penalty, because from death released some days. How long and what till then our life, who knows, so more than this, that we are dust, and hither must return and be no more. Why else this double object in our sight, a flight pursued in the air and o'er the ground, one way the selfsame hour? Why in the east darkness, ere day's mid course, and morning light more orient in yon western cloud that draws o'er the blue firmament a radiant white and slow descends with something heavenly fraught?
He erred not, for by this the heavenly bands down from a sky of jasper lighted now in paradise, and on a hill made halt, a glorious apparition, had not doubt and carnal fear that day dimmed Adam's eye. Not that more glorious, when the angels met Jacob in Mahanaim, where he saw the field pavilioned with his guardians bright, nor that which on the flaming mount appeared in Dothan, covered with a camp of fire, against the Syrian king, who to surprise one man, assassin-like, had levied war, war unproclaimed. The princely hierarch in their bright stand, there left his powers to seize possession of the garden. He alone, to find where Adam sheltered, took his way, not unperceived of Adam, who to Eve, while the great visitant approached, thus spake.
Eve, now expect great tidings, which perhaps of us will soon determine or impose new laws to be observed. For I descry from yonder blazing cloud that veils the hill one of the heavenly hosts, and by his gate none of the meanest, some great potentate, or of the thrones above, such majesty invests him coming. Yet not terrible that I should fear, nor sociably mild, as Raphael, that I should much confide, but Solomon sublime, whom not to offend, with reverence I must meet, and thou retire.
He ended, and the archangel soon drew nigh, not in his shape celestial, but as man clad to meet man. Over his lucid arms a military vest of purple flowed livelier than Meliboeine, or the grain of Sarah, worn by kings and heroes old in time of truce. Iris had dipped the woof. His starry helm unbuckled showed him prime in manhood where youth ended. By his side, as in a glistening zodiac, hung the sword, Satan's dire dread, and in his hand the spear. Adam bowed low. He kingly from his state inclined not, but his coming thus declared.
Adam, heaven's high behest no preface needs. Sufficient that thy prayers are heard, and death, then due by sentence when thou didst transgress, defeated of his seizure many days given thee of grace, wherein thou mayest repent, and one bad act with many deeds well done mayest cover. Well may then, my Lord, appeased, redeem thee quite from death's rapacious claim. But longer in this paradise to dwell permits not. To remove thee I am come, and send thee from the garden forth to till the ground whence thou wast taken, fitter soil.
He added not, for Adam at the news, heart struck with chilling grip of sorrow, stood, that all his senses bound. Eve, who unseen yet all had heard, with audible lament, discovered soon the place of her retire.
Oh, unexpected stroke, worse than of death, must I thus leave thee, paradise? Thus leave thee, native soil, these happy walks and shades, fit haunt of gods, where I had hoped to spend, quiet though sad, the respite of that day that must be mortal to us both? Oh, flowers that never will in other climate grow, my early visitation and my last at even, which I bred up with tender hand from the first opening bud and gave ye names, who now shall rear ye to the sun or rank your tribes and water from the ambrosial fount? Thee lastly, nuptial bower, by me adorned with what to sight or smell was sweet, from thee how shall I part, and whither wander down into a lower world? To this obscure and wild, how shall we breathe in other air, less pure, accustomed to immortal fruits?
Whom thus the angel interrupted mild.
Lament not, Eve, but patiently resign what justly thou hast lost, nor set thy heart, that's overfond, on that which is not thine. Thy going is not lonely. With thee goes thy husband, whom to follow thou art bound, where he abides. Think there thy native soil.
Adam, by this, from the cold sudden damp recovering, and his scattered spirits returned, to Michael thus his humble words addressed.
Is this Michael?
This is you, Adam, you.
Oh, is this Adam?
Yes.
I'm a little confused, thank you. Celestial, whether among the thrones or named of them the highest, or such of shape may seem, prince above princes, gently hast thou told thy message, which might else in telling wound and in performing end us. What besides of sorrow and dejection and despair our frailty can sustain, thy tidings bring, departure from this happy place, our sweet recess, and only consolation left, familiar to our eyes. All places else inhospitable appear and desolate, not knowing us nor known. And if by prayer incessant I could hope to change the will of him who all things can, I would not cease to weary him with my assiduous cries. But prayer against his absolute decree no more avails than breath against the wind. blown stifling back on him that breathes it forth. Therefore, to his great bidding, I submit. This most afflicts me, that departing hence, as from his face I shall be hid, deprived his countenance, his blessed countenance. Here I could frequent with worship, place by place where he vouchsafed presence divine, and to my sons relate. On this mount he appeared, under this tree stood visible. Among these pines his voice I heard, here with him at this fountain talked. So many grateful altars I would rear of grassy turf and pile up every stone of luster from the brook in memory, a monument to ages, and thereon offer sweet-smelling gums and fruits and flowers. In yonder nether world, where shall I seek his bright appearances of footstep trace? For though I fled him angry, yet recalled to life prolonged and promised race, I now gladly behold, though but his utmost skirts of glory, and far off his steps adore.
To whom thus Michael with regard benign?
Adam, thou knowest heaven his, and all the earth, not this rock only. His omnipresence fills land, sea, and air, and every kind that lives, fermented by his virtual power and warmed. All the earth he gave thee to possess and rule. No despicable gift. Surmise not then his presence to these narrow bounds confined of paradise or Eden. This had been perhaps thy capital seat, for whence had spread all generations, and had hither come from all the ends of earth to celebrate and reverence thee, their great progenitor. But this preeminence thou hast lost, brought down to dwell on even ground now with thy sons. Yet doubt not, but in valley and in plain, God is as here, and will be found alike present, and of his presence many a sign still following thee, still compassing thee around with goodness and paternal love, his face express, and of his steps the tract divine, which that thou mayest believe, and be confirmed ere thou from hence depart. No, I am sent to show thee what shall come in future days to thee and thy offspring. Good with bad expect to hear, supernal grace contending with sinfulness of men, thereby to learn true patience and to temper joy with fear and pious sorrow, equally inured by moderation either state to bear, prosperous or adverse, so shalt thou lead safest thy life and best prepared endure thy mortal passage when it comes. Ascend this hill, let Eve, for I have drenched her eyes, here sleep below, while thou to foresight wakest, as once thou slept, while she to life was formed.
To whom thus Adam gratefully replied,
Ascend, I follow thee, safe guide, the path thou leadest me, and to the hand of heaven submit, however chastening to the evil turn my obvious breast, arming to overcome by suffering and earn rest from labor won, if so I may attain.
So both ascend in the visions of God. It was a hill of paradise, the highest, from whose top the hemisphere of earth in clearest ken stretched out to the amplest reach of prospect lay. Not higher that hill, nor wider, looking round, whereon, for different cause, the tempter set our second Adam in the wilderness, to show him all earth's kingdoms and their glory. His eye might there command wherever stood city of old or modern fame, the seat of mightiest empire, from the destined walls of Kambalu, seat of Katayan Khan, and Samarkand by Oxus Temir's throne, to Paquin of Sinaean kings, and thence to Agra and Lahore of great Mogul, down to the golden Chersonese, or where the Persian in Ekbatan sat, or since in Hispahan, or where the Russian Tsar in Moscow, or the Sultan in Byzantium, Turkestan born, nor could his eye not ken the empire of Negus to his utmost port Erkoko, and the less maritime kings, Mombasa and Quiloa and Melind and Sofala, fought Ophir to the realm of Congo and Angola farthest south, or thence from Niger flood to Atlas Mount, the kingdoms of Almansor, Fez and Sus, Morocco and Algiers, and Tremisen, on Europe thence, and where Rome was to sway the world. In spirit perhaps he also saw rich Mexico, the seat of Montezum, and Cusco in Peru, the richer seat of Atahualpa, and yet unspoiled Guyana, whose great city Guerrion's sons call El Dorado. But to nobler sights, Michael, from Adam's eyes, the film removed, which that false fruit that promised clearer sight had bred. Then purged with euphrasy and rue the visual nerve, for he had much to see, and from the well of life three drops instilled. So deep the power of these ingredients pierced even to the inmost seat of mental sight, that Adam, now enforced to close his eyes, sunk down, and all his spirits became entranced. But him the gentle angel by the hand soon raised, and his attention thus recalled. Are you muted, Jeffrey?
Adam, now ope thy eyes, and first behold the effects which thy original crime hath wrought in some to spring from thee, who never touched the accepted tree, nor with the snake conspired, nor sinned thy sin, yet from that sin derived corruption to bring forth more violent deeds.
His eyes he opened, and beheld a field, part arable and tilth, whereon were sheaves new reaped, the other part sheep walks and folds. In the midst, an altar as the landmark stood, rustic, of grassy sward. Thither anon, a sweaty reaper from his tillage brought first fruits, the green ear, and a yellow sheaf, unculled, as came to hand. A shepherd next, more meek, came with the firstlings of his flock, choicest and best. Then sacrificing, laid the inwards and their fat, with incense strewed, on the cleft wood, and all due rites performed. His offering soon propitious fire from heaven consumed with nimble glance and grateful steam. The others not, for his was not sincere. Whereat he inly raged, and as they talked, smote him into the midriff with a stone that beat out life. He fell, and deadly pale groaned out his soul with gushing blood effused. Much at that sight was Adam in his heart dismayed, and thus in haste to the angel cried.
O teacher, some great mischief hath befallen to that meek man, who well had sacrificed, his piety thus and pure devotion paid?
To whom Michael thus, he also moved, replied.
These two are brethren, Adam, and to come out of thy loins, the unjust, the just hath slain, for envy that his brother's offering found from heaven acceptance. But the bloody fact will be avenged, and the other's faith, approved, lose no reward. Though here thou see him die, rolling in dust and gore.
To which our sire.
Alas, both for the deed and for the cause. But have I now seen death? Is this the way I must return to native dust? O sight of terror, foul and ugly to behold, horrid to think, how horrible to feel.
To whom thus Michael?
Death thou hast seen in his first shape on man, but in many shapes of death, and many are the ways that lead to this grim cave, all dismal. Yet a sense more terrible at the entrance than within. Some, as thou sawest, by violent stroke shall die, by fire, flood, famine, By intemperance, more in meats and drinks, which on the earth shall bring diseases dire, of which a monstrous crew before thee shall appear, that thou mayest know what misery the inabstinence of Eve shall bring on men.
Immediately, a place before his eyes appeared, sad, noisome, dark, a lazar house, it seemed, wherein were laid numbers of all diseased, all maladies of ghastly spasm, or racking torture, qualms of heartsick agony, all feverous kinds, convulsions, epilepsies, fierce catarrhs, intestine stone and ulcer, colic pangs, demoniac frenzy, moping melancholy, and moonstruck madness, pining atrophy, marasmus, and wide-wasting pestilence, dropsies, and asthmas, and joint-racking rheums. Dire was the tossing, deep the groans. Despair tended the sick busiest from couch to couch, and over them triumphant death his dart shook, but delayed to strike, though oft invoked with vows as their chief good and final hope. Sight so deform, what heart of rock could long dry-eyed behold? Adam could not, but wept, though not of woman born. Compassion quelled his best of man, and gave him up to tears a space, till firmer thoughts restrained excess, and scarce recovering words his plaint renewed.
This is Adam. Mm-hmm. Oh, miserable mankind, to what fall degraded, to what wretched state reserved, better end here unborn. Why is life given to be thus wrested from us? Rather, why obtruded on us thus? Who, if we knew what we received, would either not accept life offered, or soon beg it laid down, glad to be so dismissed in peace? Can thus the image of God in man created once, so goodly and erect, though faulty since, to such unsightly sufferings to be debased under inhuman pains? Why should not man, retaining still divine similitude in part, from such deformities be free, and for his maker's image sake exempt?
Their maker's image,
answered Michael,
then forsook them, when themselves they vilified to serve ungoverned appetite, and took his image whom they served, a brutish vice, inductive mainly to the sin of Eve. Therefore, so abject is their banishment, disfiguring not God's likeness, but their own. Or if his likeness by themselves defaced, while they pervert pure nature's healthful rules to loathsome sickness, worthily, since they God's image did not reverence in themselves.
I yield it just,
said Adam,
and submit. But is there yet no other way, besides these painful passages, how we may come to death and mix with our connatural dust?
There is,
said Michael,
if thou well observe the rule, not too much. By temperance taught, in what thou eatest and drinkest, seek from thence due nourishment, not gluttonous delight, till many years over thy head return. So mayest thou live, till, like ripe fruit, thou drop into thy mother's lap, or be with ease gathered, nor harshly plucked, for death mature. This is old age, but then thou must outlive thy youth, thy strength, thy beauty, which will change to withered, weak, and gray. Thy senses then, obtuse, all taste of pleasure must forego to what thou hast, and for the air of youth, hopeful and cheerful in thy blood, will reign a melancholy damp of cold and dry to weigh thy spirits down, and last consume the balm of life.
To whom our ancestor?
Henceforth I fly not death, nor would prolong life much. Bent rather how I may be quit fairest and easiest of this cumbrous charge, which I must keep till my appointed day of rendering up and patiently attend my dissolution.
Michael replied,
nor love thy life, nor hate, but what thou livest, live well. How long or short permit to heaven? And now prepare thee for another sight.
He looked and saw a spacious plain, whereon were tents of various hue. By some were herds of cattle grazing, others, whence the sound of instruments that made melodious chime was heard, of harp and organ, and who moved their stops and chords was seen. His voltant touch instinct, through all proportions low and high, fled and pursued transverse the resonant fugue. In other parts stood one who at the forge laboring, two massy clods of iron and brass had melted, whether found where casual fire had wasted woods on mountain or in vale, down to the veins of earth, thence gliding hot to some cave's mouth, or whether washed by stream from underground, the liquid ore he drained into fit molds prepared, from which he formed first his own tools, then what might else be wrought fusile or graven in metal. After these, but on the hither side, a different sort from the high neighboring hills, which was their seat, down to the plain descended. By their guise just men they seemed, and all their sturdy bent to worship God aright, and know his works not hid, nor those things last which might preserve freedom and peace to men. They on the plain long had not walked, when from the tents behold a bevy of fair women, richly gay in gems and wanton dress. To the harp they sung soft, amorous ditties, and in dance came on. The men, though grave, eyed them, and let their eyes rove without rein, till in the amorous net fast caught they liked, and each liking chose. And now of love they treat till the evening star, love's harbinger, appeared. Then all in heat they light the nuptial torch, and bid invoke Hymen, then first to marriage rites invoked. With feast and music all the tents resound. Such happy interview and fair event of love and youth not lost. Songs, garlands, flowers, and charming symphonies attached the heart of Adam, soon inclined to admit delight, the bent of nature, which he thus expressed.
True opener of mine eyes, prime angel bless, much better seems this vision, and more hope of peaceful days portends than those two past. Those were of hate and death, of pain much worse. Here nature seems fulfilled in all her ends.
To whom thus Michael?
Judge not what is best by pleasure, though to nature seeming meet. Created as thou art, to nobler end, holy and pure, conformity divine. Those tents thou sawest so pleasant were the tents of wickedness, wherein shall dwell his race who slew his brother. Studious they appear of arts that polish life, inventors rare, unmindful of their maker, though his spirit taught them, but they his gifts acknowledge none. Yet they a beauteous offspring shall beget, for that fair female troop thou sawest, that seemed of goddesses so blithe, so smooth, so gay, yet empty of all good, wherein consists woman's domestic honor and chief praise, bred only and completed to the taste of lustful appetents, to sing, to dance, to dress, and troll the tongue and roll the eye. To these, that sober race of men, whose lives religious titles titled them the sons of God, shall yield up all their virtue, all their fame ignobly, to the trains and to the smiles of these fair atheists, and now swim in joy, ere long to swim at large, and laugh, for which the world ere long a world of tears must weep.
To whom thus Adam of short joy bereft?
O pity and shame, that they, who to live well entered so fair, should turn aside to tread paths indirect, or in the midway faint. But still I see the tenor of man's woe holds on the same from woman to begin.
From man's effeminate slackness it begins,
said the angel,
who should better hold his place by wisdom, and superior gifts received by now prepare thee for another scene.
He looked and saw wide territory spread before him, towns and rural works between, cities of men with lofty gates and towers, concourse in arms, fierce faces threatening war, giants of mighty bone and bold emprise. Part wield their arms, part curb the foaming steed, single or in array of battle ranged, both horse and foot, nor idly mustering stood. One way a band select from forage drives a herd of beeves, fair oxen and fair kine from a fat meadow ground, or fleecy flock ewes and their bleeding lambs over the plain, their booty. Scarce with life the shepherds fly, but call in aid, which makes a bloody fray. With cruel tournament the squadrons join, where cattle pastured late, now scattered, lies with carcasses and arms the ensanguined field deserted. Others to a city strong lay siege, encamped, by battery, scale, and mine assaulting. Others from the wall defend with dart and javelin, stones and sulphurous fire, on each hand slaughter and gigantic deeds. In other part the sceptered heralds call to council in the city gates. Anon, gray-headed men and grave, with warriors mixed, assemble, and harangues are heard, but soon in factious opposition, till at last of middle age one rising, eminent in wise deport, spake much of right and wrong, of justice, of religion, truth and peace, and judgment from above. Him old and young exploded and had seized with violent hands. Had not a cloud descending snatched him thence, unseen amid the throng. So violence proceeded, and oppression, and sword law through all the plain, and refuge none was found. Adam was all in tears, and to his guide lamenting turned full sad.
Oh, what are these, death's ministers, not men, who thus deal death inhumanly to men, and multiply 10,000-fold the sin of him who slew his brother? For of whom such massacre make they but of their brethren men of men? But who was that just man, whom had not heaven rescued, had in his righteousness been lost?
To whom thus Michael?
These are the product of those ill-mated marriages thou sawest, where good with bad were matched, who of themselves abhor to join, and by imprudence mixed, produced prodigious births of body or mind. Such were these giants, men of high renown, for in those days might only shall be admired, and valor and heroic virtue called to overcome in battle and subdue nations and bring home spoils of infinite manslaughter, shall be held the highest pitch of human glory, and for glory done of triumph to be styled great conquerors, patrons of mankind, gods and sons of gods, destroyers rightly called and plagues of men. Thus fame shall be achieved, renown on earth, and what most merits fame in silence hid. But he, the seventh from thee, whom now beheld'st the only righteous in a world perverse, and therefore hated, therefore so beset with foes for daring single to be just, and utter odious truth, that God would come to judge them with his saints, him the Most High wrapped in a balmy cloud with winged steeds, did, as thou sawest, receive to walk with God high in salvation and the climes of bliss, exempt from death, to show thee what reward awaits the good, the rest what punishment, which now direct thine eyes and soon, behold.
He looked and saw the face of things quite changed. The brazen throat of war had ceased to roar. All now was turned to jollity and game, to luxury and riot, feast and dance, marrying or prostituting, as befell rape or adultery, where passing fair allured them, thence from cups to civil broils. At length a reverend sire among them came, and of their doings great dislike declared, and testified against their ways. He oft frequented their assemblies, where so met, triumphs or festivals, and to them preached conversion and repentance, as to souls in prison under judgments imminent, but all in vain, which when he saw, he ceased contending, and removed his tents far off. Then from the mountain-hewing timber tall began to build a vessel of huge bulk, measured by cubit, length and breadth and height, smeared round with pitch, and in the side a door contrived, and of provisions laid in large for man and beast, when lo, a wonder strange, of every beast and bird and insect small came sevens and pairs, and entered in, as taught their order, last the sire and his three sons with their four wives, and God made fast the door. Meanwhile the south wind rose, and with black wings wide hovering, all the clouds together drove from under heaven. The hills to their supply vapor, and exhalation dusk and moist, sent up amain. And now the thickened sky like a dark ceiling stood. Down rushed the rain, impetuous, and continued till the earth no more was seen. The floating vessel swum uplifted, and secure with beaked prow, rode tilting o'er the waves, all dwellings else flood overwhelmed, and them with all their pomp deep under water rolled. Sea covered sea, sea without shore, and in their palaces where luxury late reigned, sea monsters whelped and stabled. Of mankind, so numerous late, all left, in one small bottom swum and barked. How didst thou grieve then, Adam, to behold the end of all thy offspring, end so sad, depopulation? Thee another flood of tears and sorrow, a flood thee also drowned, and sunk thee as thy sons, till gently reared by the angel, on thy feet thou stoodest at last, though comfortless, as when a father mourns his children, all in view destroyed at once, and scarce to the angel utteredest thus thy plaint.
Now, who's the speaker?
This was Adam.
I think it's Adam.
Okay. O visions ill unseen, ill foreseen, better had I lived ignorant of future, so had borne my part of evil only, each day's lot enough to bear. Those now that were dispensed the burden of many ages on me light at once, by my foreknowledge gaining birth abortive, to torment me ere their being with thought that they must be. Let no man seek henceforth to be foretold what shall befall him or his children, evil he may be sure, which neither his foreknowing can prevent, and he the future evil shall no less in apprehension than in substance feel grievous to bear. But that care now is past. Man is not whom to warn, whose few escaped famine and anguish will at last consume, wandering that watery desert. I had hope when violence was ceased and war on earth and all would have then gone well, peace could have crowned with length of happy days the race of man. But I was far deceived, for now I see peace to corrupt no less than war to waste. How comes it thus? Unfold, celestial guide, and whether here the race of man will end. To whom thus Michael? Is this in quotes?
To whom thus Michael? Sorry, I was muted.
Oh.
So this is now Mike Jeffrey.
Yeah. Those whom thou whom last thou sawest in triumph and luxurious wealth? Are they first seen in acts of prowess eminent and great exploits, but of true virtue void? Who, having spilt much blood and done much waste, subduing nations, and achieved thereby fame in the world, high titles, and rich prey, shall change their course to pleasure, ease, and sloth, surfeit, and lust, to wantonness and pride, raise out of friendship, hostile deeds, and peace. The conquered also, and enslaved by war, shall, with their freedom lost, all virtue lose, and fear of God, from whom their piety feigned in sharp contest of battle found no aid against invaders. Therefore, cooled in zeal, thenceforth shall practice how to live secure, worldly or dissolute, on what their Lord shall leave them to enjoy. For the earth shall bear more than enough that temperance may be tried. So all shall turn degenerate, all depraved. Justice and temperance, truth and faith forgot. One man except, the only son of light in a dark age, against example good, against allurement, custom, and a world offended, fearless of reproach and scorn or violence, he of their wicked ways shall them admonish, and before them set the paths of righteousness, how much more safe and full of peace, denouncing wrath to come on their impenitence, and shall return of them derided, but of God observed the one just man alive. By his command shall build a wondrous ark, as thou beheldst, to save himself and household from amidst a world devote to universal wrack. No sooner he, with them of man and beast select for life, shall in the lark ark be lodged and sheltered round, but all the cataracts of heaven set open on the earth shall pour rain day and night. All fountains of the deep broke up shall heave the ocean to usurp beyond all bounds, till inundation rise above the highest hills. Then shall this mount of paradise by might of waves be moved out of this place, pushed by the horned flood, with all his verdure spoiled and trees adrift, down the great river to the opening gulf, and there take root an island salt and bare, the haunt of seals and orcs, and sinews clang, to teach thee that God attributes to place no sanctity, if none be thither brought by men who there frequent or therein dwell. And now, what further shall ensue, behold.
He looked, and saw the ark hull on the flood, which now abated, for the clouds were fled, driven by a keen north wind, that blowing dry wrinkled the face of deluge, as decayed. And the clear sun on his wide watery glass gazed hot, and of the fresh wave largely drew, as after thirst, which made their flowing shrink from standing lake to tripping ebb, that stole with soft foot towards the deep, who now had stopped his sluices, as the heaven his windows shut. The ark no more now floats, but seems on ground, fast on the top of some high mountain fixed. And now the tops of hills as rocks appear, with clamor thence the rapid currents drive toward the retreating sea their furious tide. Forthwith from out the ark a raven flies, and after him the surer messenger, a dove sent forth once and again to spy green tree or ground whereon his foot may light. The second time returning, in his bill an olive leaf he brings, pacific sign. Anon dry ground appears, and from his ark the ancient sire descends with all his train, then with uplifted hands and eyes devout, grateful to heaven, over his head beholds a dewy cloud, and in the cloud a bow conspicuous with three listed colors gay, betokening peace from God and covenant new, whereat the heart of Adam, erst so sad, greatly rejoiced, and thus his joy broke forth.
O thou who future things canst represent as present, heavenly instructor, I revive at this last sight, assured that man shall live with all the creatures and their seed preserve. Far less I now lament for one whole world of wicked sons destroyed than I rejoice for one man's found so perfect and so just, that God vouchsafes to raise another world from him and all his anger to forget. But say, what mean those colored streaks in heaven, distended as the brow of God appeased? Or serve they as a flowery verge to bind the fluid skirts of that same watery cloud, lest it again dissolve and shower the earth?
To whom the archangel?
Dexterously thou aimest, so willingly doth God remit his ire. Though late repenting him of man depraved, grieved at his heart, when looking down he saw the whole earth filled with violence, and all flesh corrupting each their way, yet those remove such grace shall one man shall just one man find in his sight, that he relents not to blot out mankind, and makes a covenant never to destroy the earth again by flood, nor let the sea surpass his bounds, nor rain to drown the world with man therein or beast. But when he brings o'er the cloud, o'er the earth a cloud, will therein set his triple-colored bow, whereupon to look and call to mind his covenant, day and night, seed time and harvest, heat and hoary frost shall hold their course, till fire purge all things new, both heaven and earth, wherein the just shall dwell.
Wow, that's awesome. We have about 5 minutes. I think we were late today. I know you have something else to do, Jeffrey. And I just want to respect your time frame. Oh, okay. I was thinking about... I don't know what you guys want to do. If you want to do something after this, for Visionary Voices, but I just wanted to plant a seed.
Talked about Don Quixote, and I was listening to you do the exercise this morning. I thought, wow, Don Quixote would definitely be down in the pelvic region.
That's right. Yeah. I can do the musical. I am Don Quixote, the man of La Mancha. But I don't know how about Visionary Voices, since we've established this space for poetry. I don't know if that's a great choice or not, but I think it would be fun to read it as a novel. But I looked at this, James Merrill, The Changing Light of Sandover. It's epic. It's really, really big. I think this is would be a real good workout for a voice, and it's a contemporary voice. He died, I think, in the late 90s, early 90s maybe. He died of AIDS, actually. He is a marvelous character and a great lyrical voice. But he produced this with his boyfriend, actually, doing a Ouija board. Mm-hmm. And they started to channel different personalities like Goethe and Freud and all these other and poets. And I think it's psychologically very, very weird. Because this is an actual, you know, Merrill said that this is actually what happened. But large speeches were given by these disincarnate beings. And, you know, Merrill created this big epic out of it. But I think it'd be kind of interesting for us because it's a very weird production. Lots of sub-personalities. And I think actually there was on Weird Studies, there was a podcast devoted to this particular Merrill text. It's in three parts. I haven't read the last two parts. I've read the first part, but it's very witty. It's very strange too. Anyway, that's a suggestion. I was just thinking of like something contemporary that's close to the way we talk, but still has a kind of a heightened speech that would demand certain kinds of, you know, it would stretch us. I think our vocal instruments need to be in practice. But there are other texts out there. I'm just open to working this way. If anyone knows of something that they're really inspired by, I think it'd be great if we just sort of put those out on the table and sort of reorganize around that. Since we're coming to almost the close of this particular
one epic. Book left.
The what?
One book left.
One book left, yes.
I'm not familiar with that text at all, John.
You what? I'm sorry?
I'm not familiar with that text at all, so I'll look into it.
I'll send you a link. It's quite well known among certain, like Harold Bloom and a few other critics, you know, claim it's like a major work. I wouldn't know, but I have read Merrill over the years, and I find him very engaging. He was very close friends with Elizabeth Bishop. He was very closeted. He wasn't closeted at all. He was openly gay, but he came out of that 40s and 50s, kind of 60s world. And I think Marco, I posted a few things of his.
Yeah, I actually have the book, and I haven't read it. I've only read the first, the first section. He wanted to do a novel, I guess, was the original idea, and kept running into obstacles, and then realized that he could say what he wanted to say in poetry. And then from there, he introduces the kind of scene with the Ouija board and his partner, and Ephraim, I think is the name of the...
Yeah.
Ephraim.
That's the book I read, yeah.
Yeah, I would be... I think we should date it. maybe like have a session and try and see, you know, where it takes us.
Yeah.
I have... The only thing I'd put on the table... And I don't know if this is the appropriate context for it or not, but I've been reading Eliot's quartets.
Love the quartets. It's one of my, there are two books I carry, a poetry that I carry around with me, and that's one of them. So
that's
deep, and it's a dark. It's not dark. It's a very, I don't know what the word is, but kind of there's a gravitas maybe to that text, and it's sort of the product of a lifetime of, of experience and contemplation and poetic practice. And it's not too super long either. So I was imagining maybe we can do a session on each quartet or something like that, and leave enough time for discussion. And at the same time, I'm open to something kind of more playful and more exuberant and kind of messy, because this is like extremely refined poetry.
Could read the old Possum Books of Cat. I mean, same author, but it's very playful.
I went through a T.S. Eliot phase. I started when I was a teenager, and I picked it up again when I was in my 20s. So I know those poems extremely well.
Yeah.
I almost know them by heart. In a way, it's a weakness if you know things too well, because you can't really read them fresh. I think that's a problem with Shakespeare. If you've done enough Shakespeare, you can't confront them as something new. You just hear echoes of previous performances. So I'm sort of that way with the last quartets, because there have been so many very fine recordings, Alec Guinness and Paul Scofield, lots of very great actors have done really beautiful work with that. But I'm open to that. I think it'd be fun to do, but I think we could do it quickly. After doing Milton, I feel like our endurance is much greater than we may know right now. I think the Sandor, I think it would be much easier to read this. You know, some of it's written in verse. But it's all a There is a meter here, but mm-hmm. it's free verse. But I think it would fit our voices very easily. Mm-hmm. It's not like, because it's a contemporary of ours.
Well, I will look at it. You can find John, flow. Sure. I'd rather not decide before I have looked at it. But
yeah, I haven't read the last two books. I just read the first. So it would give me a motivation to take on the whole thing.
I do feel I like the quartets in the sense that I think a smaller piece would be. I sort of feel after a year at Milton, maybe a kind of rest in quotes before we get into something as big as Milton again. I'm open.
Well, maybe we could do kind of what we did when we were alternating with Blake and Whitman is try a few things until something kind of sticks and takes us into a fuller experience. I think we weren't perhaps ready just to read the entire Paradise Lost when we started this experiment a year ago. And it was good to have that variety at first and to get a taste for different voices. And then to do the deep dive, maybe we try a few things for the next few sessions after Canto 12 and see what wants to happen.
That's great. I feel like I'm open to that. I think there's something about the visionary right now. And as I started this call today and so much distress by the hiccups in this technology. But I'm also I'm resonating with, all of the what's happening on the street. It was 2 days ago, I walked out my door and there was Black Lives Matter walking on my street and all these young people shouting and chanting. Of course, I stepped right on into the march and marched with them. What a great way to start the day. But it was so weird to just open your door. You know, you look at YouTube and all these events happening and all around the world, and then you walk outside your door, think you're going to go out and do some shopping, and there you are in the middle of a march, of people chanting and joining voices to create a liberation, human liberation. Over and over and over and over and over and over. We've done this so many times, taken to the streets. But I think it's such a fragile, our ecology is so fragile right now. And I feel it at night, especially. Even it was raining last night. We've had a few days of a lot of heat. And I don't have an air conditioner because I just think they're bad for me. But I had this feeling of, I go out on my fire escape and I look out there and it's like this, at night, I'm surrounded by buildings and large buildings. It's like blackout. There's no one there. The lights are out. So it's a really weird feeling that we're moving from this bustling metropolis to something like a P. Day, a Philip K. Dick dystopia. Or maybe it'll be great. Maybe everyone will just leave. I'll be the only one here. I'll have it all to myself. And the trees and the vines will start growing over all these tenement buildings. And in a few decades, it'll just be a forest. That might happen. There's no work here, none. There's no tourist industry. There's no theater. There's no galleries. There's nothing happening. It's over. Is that all there is? Yes, that's all there is. So who knows what's going to happen next? I think we need to have access to great literature right now is a great blessing, because I can hear in Milton in that almost holographic display of the future that is being presented through an Adam and Eve's response, especially Adam's response. I think it's very fascinating how that comes through and how that happens and what the mechanics of all that are. making the invisible visible.
And no names, no mention of Noah, no mention of Cain, just the stories and no names.
we sort of know the stories.
Yeah, we know the stories.
In our system. But I can also hear sort of descriptions of the future that we're in right now. You know, as things get worse and worse and worse, it's not unfamiliar what is being described, I think. So who knows? Anyway, I don't want to be a downer, but I think it's times like these, I think, when things are going really, are very, very uncertain, that, you know, great poetry can sustain us and be an enormous resource. Which I find this today. It's sort of like, I don't know who, I think it was James Levine, the great conductor. It was one of those, after 9/11, they were giving all these concerts for free, and, you know, people were flocking to hear all these great requiems. And there was no applause at the end. Because it's a requiem and it's sacred music, but also because people are just so devastated. But I loved what James Levine said about how the music, if there's no applause at the end of the performance, the music doesn't stop. I mean, physically the music has stopped, but the afterglow of the music can last for days. And so I feel that when I'm reading Milton with you guys, and the session is over, I'll find myself for a couple of days, it has an afterglow. So I think that's part of that, you know, plugging into that subtle current. It's there all the time. It's always, it never turns off, but it's just when we turn our collective attention to it in a very mindful way, it gets amplified. And I think has really healing effects. So,
yeah, that's the vibration, the vibrational quality. I think it has, it doesn't, you know, it fades, but it doesn't stop. Exactly. And it does feel like we're living in the visionary future that Michael describes to Adam here. I mean, we know this because we've gone through it before, and we see it iterating and kind of spiraling. I thought the way that this canto ended was kind of, it was beautiful and ominous too. It brought to mind the quote by James Baldwin that you've shared before, John. And God sent Noah a rainbow sign, no more flood, the fire next time. I wonder if, I thought, well, we needn't fear rising sea levels necessarily. But
I can, because they say the second avenue will be underwater. That's where I live. So I have to be creative. What am I going to do? Get a boat, you know?
There you go. Start saving those inflatable
inflatable racketing.
Yeah. Anyway, the fire next time. I think this is maybe the phase of prophetic history that we're entering. Maybe.
See. Yeah, I think so. It's a great time to be alive. Got a front row seat.
All right. Well, till next time.
Are we going to meet next week, or are we going to wait for 3 weeks to meet?
Let's wait. Yeah, I'd like to. I think it's good for me every few weeks or every couple of months to have do something different with my Wednesday.
Okay.
And we can think about the future of what kind of text we want to co-explore. Because I'm sure there are lots of things out there if we think about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Plan. Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It was lovely to read with you this morning.
Likewise.
It's wonderful. Thank you.